Yes? Yes? Okay, good. First, I'd like to thank the Institute for hosting this, the organizers for getting it all together, and for the invitation to speak. If I could go back and give my talk a subtitle, it would be, it all read, Tri-Categories, What's Hard, and What's Not. Often, this part is focused on, and maybe the What's Not part is left out. These are seen as very complicated, difficult to work with structures, and on the one hand that's true, on the other hand I don't feel that's true. So I want to maybe convince you there's a little bit more in this column than you might have previously expected. I'd like to go horizontally, but I don't think that's going to work because what's going to go on this bottom board here is bigger than that bottom board. So sadly my rows won't work out quite right, so I'll just have to go vertically. So first, I'll tell you something that you probably think is hard, and then I'll try to dissuade you for a little while, and then we'll actually do some math. So, if there's one thing that's hard about tri-categories, it's probably the diagrams. The Gordon Power Street memoir from 96, where they defined tri-categories and gave the coherence theorem, has pages and pages of large diagrams, especially if you look at the axioms for a transformation. There are axioms that don't even fit on a single page. And it's very easy to open this up. If you open to a random page, you'll probably see a large diagram. Look at it and say, I'm done, and put it away, and you'll have learned nothing. So that's probably the number one thing. Steve, I believe, called it terrifying. And I would say fear is definitely the emotional response that you probably get from these diagrams. But it's not the one that you should have for a number of reasons. So the first is that most of these diagrams are very, I probably won't write very many words in all capitals, straightforward. That is, if you actually just look at the different components, for one, there aren't as many as you really think, and two, they're probably all things that you're familiar with from some other context. We'll see more of this in a bit. If you know about bi-categories, or if you know some homotopy theory, you've probably seen almost everything that I could put on the board. In some context, yeah. They may be a little fancier, and they're a little bit bigger than maybe what you're used to dealing with, but in reality, they're not that much bigger. No one might believe that, but they are easy to reconstruct at home. Maybe you can't do it now. You probably don't want to, but you probably can by the end of today. That's what I'm hoping, at least. Or at least you can get a really long way where all that you need to do is go and maybe look at something very briefly and you'll know. Because the content isn't something you don't understand, it's just there's a lot of stuff. And if you were to go home and try to do this, I claim that in fact you would probably overdo it, but you wouldn't overdo it in a way that actually meant anything. We'll definitely see this when we talk about the definition itself. You're likely to come up with more diagrams than you need, but not so many that you've actually ruined anything. You're going to just come up with some useful extra things that you probably want later, but that you don't necessarily have to have to start with. Yeah. You'll probably throw in two or three extra diagrams. I suspect almost everyone would put in two more. Maybe you'll put in a third. Maybe not, I don't know. So finally, okay. Finally, if you were to try to use this in some kind of concrete case, that is, you want to build a tri-category, you probably find it's not really very hard at all. You'd probably find that once you got to the stage of checking these very intimidating looking axioms, either the case is something extremely concrete and you can just get your hands on it and immediately know what's going on, or it's maybe more of just a construction that you need, something technical, in which case you likely have a theorem to tell you what to do. The first real tri-category that anyone would try to construct for you is bicat, and you have to do a little work to construct all the pieces, but once you've written down all the data, you're done. There is literally no axiom checking because you have a coherence theorem that tells you that you're already done, and that's often the case. I'm not going to convince you that all these diagrams are just a piece of cake. There is something that's difficult. But I think it all boils down to bookkeeping. Basically, you're dealing with a lot of stuff when you have a tri-category. You have four different kinds of cells. Those all need names. You have three compositions. You have some special cells, like an associativity. I'll explain that in a second. Left and right units, you have a unit guy here, you've got some extra stuff. These times four means maybe you actually have four things there. I want four, even though you could, in a sense, get away with having one thing, so this is a lot of extra stuff. And we haven't even had functors or transformations or anything. So this is, I mean, this is just a lot of stuff on a piece of paper, but none of it's actually difficult to understand. It's all hard, sort of in the same way that if you're given a large word search puzzle, that's hard, it's going to take you a little while, but if you go through it methodically, you will do everything right. A consequence of all this bookkeeping is that TriCat which is some week 4 category is really hard. And if you want to do anything fairly serious with tri-categories, I mean, there you go, that's the thing you're dealing with. But everything hard here is willpower hard and not intellectually hard. Okay, so this is sort of the first reaction that you might have to try categories. And a second one might be, that coherence is hard, but you don't really know why. You don't know what to do with it. You don't really know what it says. Some of the things involved in the statement are not very comfortable. And at this point, I would say confusion is really the number one thing, if you can get past fear. Some reasons might be that the proof is hard. That's probably the number one thing, besides maybe what you're supposed to come away with in the end. I'll say coherence is easy. That's not really easy, but there's a lot of the story of coherence that is easy because you already know it. If you do it right, if you proceed in an appropriate order with a plan, you can tell coherence for tri-categories in the exact same way that you do coherence for bi-categories, and you can get lots of cool things out of that. And not only do the statements look almost exactly the same, but the proofs do too. They're a little bit harder. You've got some more stuff, but you don't have to think a whole lot harder. So there are three things I might call coherence for bi-categories. One is that every bicategory is biequivalent to a strict Q-category. The second is every diagram of constraints commutes. And a third is for X, a graph enriched in categories the natural map this is the free bicategory generated by that data. This is the free strict two category generated by that data. But this natural map is a strict biequivalent. This is probably the most commonly referenced statement of coherence. This is maybe the way you use it the most. And this one is probably the technically most powerful. The first one and the third one, to me, are really the statements of coherence. And the second one is a calculational interpretation. And when you do coherence for tricategories, you get the same things. 1 and 2, or 1 and 3, it's really changing bi to tri, 2 to 3, and this to free gray category. Everything else is exactly the same. 2 is a little bit different, but in a sense it's not. It's exactly the same. Well, I just mean that this is a strict functor between bicategories, and it's a biequivalence. Yeah?
When you say free bicategories, you mean free with respect to the strict functor?
Yeah.
So it can be left adjoint to
the yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I said you have to change strict two category to gray category. Maybe I'll write that. You have to put gray there too. Maybe I'll put change by the try and change two category. The gray category. But the rest of it. And not only is it the same, but you can move between the different theorems in exactly the same way. For instance, Tom explained that if you want to prove statement 1, you can do a Yoneda argument. And for tri-categories, to prove statement 1, the easiest way is to do a Yoneda argument. It involves one extra step, which is not very difficult. Other than that, it's exactly the same. To prove 2, maybe the best thing to do is to first prove 3 and then do some calculation. That's how I like to think of it. And that's what works for tri-categories, too. it's essentially the same story, or at least the story has the same form. So, the hard part of coherence is most definitely related to statement two, and it's this. It really is. What does it mean besides replacing something monstrous and scary with something slightly less monstrous and scary? And that's still hard. And it's probably the most interesting part of the story. It's where you start to see a lot of the subtleties of things that really live in the world of bi categories start coming into play and telling you what you can do and what you can't do. It still remains hard, but it's the interesting part. Hopefully I'll get to talk about some of that at the end. Roughly the rest of the time, I want to sort of follow this pattern. I want to talk about the definition. I want to build it up from nothing, which will take a lot of board space, but maybe not very much thinking. Then I want to talk about some sort of things you can do, some things you can't do, and then get to this question of coherence, which I'll discuss in sort of an increasingly technical way. Yes? Yeah, definitely. No, I've had many conversations where people have said we should be able to write some computer program to check some. Not to my knowledge. I would very much like someone who can do that sort of thing much better than I can. Because a lot of the calculations that are hard that you need to do to get anywhere, I mean, they're not really that hard. Like I said, it's just a lot of bookkeeping. The fact is, if you want to check that some diagram commutes and it's got, say, 12 or so arrows, I mean, you'll just fill it in with some small number of squares or other shapes that you know commute, maybe 5 or 6. That's not so bad. But here, the diagrams are large-ish diagrams of two cells, and you might have to do kind of complicated things. So filling that in with 5 or 6 steps is 10 pieces of paper, and that takes a long time. So I'd like a computer to do it for me, definitely. But at the same time, you shouldn't be afraid to try to do a few of these on your own, because they're not really that bad. All right. I just wanted to check if some, well, I would have liked something to check if some diagram commutes. I mean, yeah, it's a generator and relations problem, and it should be able to tell me, here are 10 steps that turns this thing into this thing. Because none of the steps are very hard, and there are usually very few choices, so I feel like any reasonable computer could do any diagram that I can put into it, it can probably tell me instantly. All right. All right, we're going to build from what we know, which is not very much, but you don't need to know anything, really. And we're going to define tri-categories. And this is supposed to be my proof to you that you could go home after this talk and probably come up with everything you need to. So, this definition is a categorification of the definition of a bicategory. So I thought I'd write down the bicategory definition so we have it up for reference. We start with the bicategory. We have a set of objects for every pair of objects. We have a category we have composition functors. There are unit functors from terminal category to here. There's an associativity isomorphism to have my arrows be the right dimension so that you know, although it tends to get hard. This is 2, it's a 2 cell. We have 2 different unit isomorphisms. And there are 2 axioms. We want this guy to commute. And we want this guy to commute. All right. Hopefully that's the definition everybody's seen before. Maybe I didn't say natural. All right, so let's take this definition and do our best to shove everything up a dimension and see what happens. We're going to get to those times fours in not very long, if anyone's wondering. I do probably have no hope of getting this on four boards, but that's okay. All right, set of objects stays the same. Instead of HOM categories, we want HOM by categories. There, composition was a functor. Here, composition is what Tom would call a weak functor. I'm going to get tired of saying the word weak. Everything is weak for the rest of my talk, unless I say strict. So I'll just call this a functor. We have unit functors from the terminal by category. All right, so far nothing has happened. And now we get to the associativity. And the question is, how do you categorify isomorphism? What's the next step up? Gordon Power Street has equivalences here, where these are weak transformations, which makes them two cells in the tri-category bicat, which makes them one cells in the functor bicategories. So we fix two bicategories, and there's a bicategory of weak functors, transformation, and modifications between them. And so to be an equivalence means to be an equivalence there, and that just means that all of the components are equivalences. So there's a transformation going back the other way, such that both composites are isomorphic to the identity. Let me write that down, and then I'll answer that question. I didn't name these. That's good, because I don't want to write anything. Here you have the choice, which is either say this transformation is weakly invertible, or to say here's a weak inverse for it, and to provide evidence of the fact. So I'm going to take this to be an adjoint equivalence. So what that means is that I have a guy going back the other direction, and I have some chosen isomorphisms between the two composites to the identity, and that one of these is, I'm going to treat as the unit, and the other is the co-unit, so we have an adjoint equivalence. Generally, if I need to call something an adjoint equivalence, I'll just underline it. That'll be an A dot, a co-unit, and a unit. Definitely. Because I'll need them later.
Every equivalence by category is an adjoint.
Yeah, you can make it one. So if you have an equivalence in a bicategory, you can always choose something going back the other way. You can always choose, you can always find an isomorphism between this way and this way in the identity. And you can always then say, if you want that isomorphism to be either the unit or the co-unit of your adjoint equivalence, and then you get the rest. It's as good as you want. Yeah. It is literally exactly the same. Although, the statement that every equivalence of categories can be promoted to the level of an adjoint equivalence. If you write down a proof of that, it's not very long. If you write down a proof of the statement in a bicategory, it's a little bit fussier. I mean, the proof in a general bicategory works just fine. It just so happens that in cat, you have a lot of control over what the two cells are.
But you can deduce it for the general case from the fact that it's true in cat.
You can.
I mean, I wouldn't do that.
All right, so here's the first time that my definition of tri-category looks in any interesting way dissimilar from the definition of a bicategory, and that is we just have to have adjoint equivalences instead of isomorphisms. Yes, this is different from Gordon Power Street. They just have equivalences. I like to take adjoint equivalences. It'll be useful later in talking about coherence statement number 3, which has a lot of power to it and lets you do number 2, whereas with just equivalences I don't quite know how to do that except by turning it into something with adjoint equivalences. Which you can do. There's no problem. I mean, there are other reasons I like this better, namely that if you try to write down, say, diagrams for transformations, you have to use these A dot guys. So to even define what a transformation is, you either have to have an A dot guy or you have to choose one at the time you want to write down your transformation. So I'd prefer to fix it from the beginning and go. Lots of formulas end up involving these things going the other way. I don't think it means anything. I don't think you really can. I mean, like if you try to construct the free 2 category with some arrow being an equivalence, you probably have to do a lot of fancy footwork to get your universal property to mean anything. And it's certainly not going to be a statement like every functor, whatever appropriate flavor functor you like, that sends this arrow to an equivalence in some other 2 category factors uniquely. You're not going to get that. That's just not possible. We're not done. We've done, well, I don't know, like 20% of it or something.
Okay.
Yeah?
Are there any explicit examples you know of when, if you leave out the, yeah, specified interest, where you get a loss of functoriality or naturality?
No. I don't really know very many examples, to be honest, so that's, I'll be upfront about that. Yeah. All right. We need some unit adjoint equivalences. Like so. I should also point out that this is slightly different than the definition given in Gordon Power Street in maybe an uninteresting way. Well, it's not interesting. In that their R goes the other way. My R gets rid of a unit, and their R actually puts a unit in. It turns out that R dot is the thing that will show up in maybe every diagram I write down today. But I chose this just to be consistent, keep things straight. All right. We've gone through all of adjoint equivalence. Yep. Yeah. So in particular, the thing that I have R dot goes from, goes like this. And that's what Gordon Power Street would call R. Okay. That's my adjoint equivalence notation.
Did you say or say something about the naturality of the inside?
I have not said anything, except that this is supposed to be a transformation, and these are transformations as well. But I have not said what naturality is, or what functoriality means for those functors, which is all, they're all interesting things and important things to think about, but I just wanted to try to get... Yeah. All right. So we've gone through all the data over there, so now we need new data corresponding to these axioms. That's generally how the game is played. So these are going to be some invertible modifications. I've run out of space here. So now I need a bunch of invertible modifications. The first one is that first axiom there, and it's going to be dealing with associativity. So I've not written a symbol for composing these one cells, so when I write things like this, that means if you call this composition tensor, which is standard, then this should really be a tensor one. Oh, see, my arrows are all the wrong dimension. I said I was going to try to make it right, but I didn't. I'm thinking about the displayed dimension is the dimension of the arrow in the HOM bi category. So this is a 3-cell in the tri category. Well, that's a 2-cell here. All right, so we have a pi, and we have this guy. I'm going to write it in a slightly funny way. That guy is called mu. And that exhausts what we can get from this definition. Yes.
So those things there are morphisms, but for just one morphism inside the black category.
Yes.
So where does the word modification come from?
So right. Modifications are the three cells in this tricategory bicat. It's the things that go between transformations.
That part there, is that a two morphism inside that bicategory T A.
So this is the it's the components of the modification. So a modification is given for every object, you give me a two cell between the two different transformations.
So I think this is one of the things that's really confusing if you try and do that thing with Python. Because you have to keep your head in several different times at the same time.
So you have to, when you write these diagrams down, you're either going to write them down component-wise, which is what I did, or you're going to write them down as three arrows somewhere, which is very, very much larger. And I've been consistent here in writing all the components down. Whereas if you actually look at the definition, what you'll see is up until this point, Gordon Power Street writes down these diagrams in bicat and then switches to components, because the three-dimensional diagrams are ridiculously huge. So we'll start from the top down. So a modification goes between two transformations, and the way you give a modification is to say for every object, give a two cell here. Is that what I want?
You might have wanted three arrows on top today.
Yeah, maybe I'll put three arrows here. So let's write down a transformation from F to G. This is the unpacking direction. This is the logical direction. So with this has a couple parts. It says for every object, produce for me a one cell, and for every morphism, there's a commutative square, or with a nice morphism in it. Yeah. So this is some transformation you get by sticking A's together in this way. And this is another transformation. These are just the components.
I guess what confused me is where I went from. Where it says associated equivalences, if you had said their transformation.
All right. Maybe I should write that down then. So these are adjoint equivalences.
So those are actually the components of the transformation.
Yeah, these are the components. So no, these are natural transformations. Yeah, these are just the components of the natural transformation.
And those things are the components.
That
It's the same, though. It's just what transformation means. This is natural transformation. Yeah. In this case, a natural transformation sort of is its component. That's all there is. There's a little more stuff in the bi-categories case. Over there, it's an isomorphism in the functor category. Here, it's an adjoint equivalence in the functor bi-category.
One final
thing.
That's where natural on the left, right? That's an additional thing even beyond the fact that these things form a natural
problem. It's the same thing as this guy.
You've got functors from B, C, A, B. There you fix A, B, and B, C. I thought that word natural means, now what happens if you go...
Right, this is about fixing, so we've still fixed the objects here, and it's natural in these three variables. It's about two cells between, so if I take a two cell from F to F prime, G to G prime, H to H prime, that gives me a two cell from FGH to F prime, G prime, H prime. Do you want me to write down a naturality square?
No.
Okay. No, I don't think that's true. I disagree. No, this doesn't have anything to do with that. Yeah. One thing I could do is alpha beta. So that's the naturality condition. Question, Tom.
Yeah, your pentagon looks like that pentagon, but your triangle, for some reason you've chosen to use R blob rather than R.
Yeah, I said I was going to write it in a funny way.
Are you going to say why?
Mostly because it fits in a lot of the diagrams. there's a lot of, at this level, there's a lot of playing around with sources and targets just to kind of make your shapes work out in a reasonable way. And
you just say, through experience, you know it's more convenient somehow, but it's not essential.
It's not essential. Not at all. All right. So, as I said before, we've now exhausted everything from this definition. I will, on the other hand, write a 3 here and a 4 here, and not tell you what they are just yet, and erase the bicategories definition. It's not helping us anymore. And I will assure you that 3 and 4 are not hard to discover. And if you try to do this on your own, you might be confused for a little while, but then you just realize you need those things. And I'll show you how that works. So now we need some axioms, and since we're sitting at home with no copy of Gordon Power Street in sight, we're just going to start going and see if we get anywhere and when we get stuck, and maybe when we quit. You don't have that either. All right. All right, so there's an associativity axiom. It concerns composites of length 5. That pi over there is our data about composites of length 4, so you say, okay, well, what if I have 5 things and string them together? And I'm not going to write this one down because, well, this is too easy. It is too easy. So the reason is that this is just the fifth associahedron, which are these gadgets to tell you about loop spaces that have been around for quite a long time. Just like that pentagon is really just K4, and the associativity, you just sort of keep going down. This is the part where maybe you want to know some homotopy theory. You should maybe know this. If you didn't know anything about the associahedra, well, what would you do? Well, you would look and you would say, well, how did we get the associativity axiom that we needed for bicategories? Is we took one extreme way of bracketing 4 things and the other extreme way of bracketing 4 things, and we figured out how to get between them and said, okay, those are equal. And you'd basically do the same thing here, except it's a little more complicated. You'd first you'd start by writing down a path from this guy to the other one. Let's see if I can do this right. The answer is no. And it would follow the same sort of pattern that we had up there before. They just sort of gradually move our parentheses over, and you'd write down the other path, gradually moving your parentheses over. And then you would start filling it in with pi's and with some naturality isomorphisms. And pretty quickly, you're only going to end up with about one thing, where one thing is two pieces that look different and have the same boundary. And you'd say, okay, that's my axiom. And it doesn't really matter if your picture comes out as pretty as the one in Gordon Power Street, or if it actually looks like K5, or if it looks like you moved some cells to the other side, you'd still have the same content. This, you can't go wrong. You're going to write the correct cells down, even if your picture is ugly. Yeah?
What about the tag before the
endpoint? Yeah, I haven't said anything about that, have I? I'll do that at the end. All right. The second thing you're going to need are some unit axioms. So we have this mu guy, which is an axiom about what happens when you have a unit in the middle of two things. So your first instinct might be, well, what if I have four one cells and one of those two middle guys is a unit? So you have composites that look like this, and you want to write down some axioms. So let's try to write some down. Now, I think it's fair to say that you will not get the boundary of the diagram I'm about to write down the first try. But there aren't very many things you can do, and you will eventually write down this. There's a little trial and error here. That's okay. So I want to have an FGH, and I want to put an I. Let's say I have it here in the second spot, so I'll do this guy. All right. I'm going to put an I in the second spot and leave everything else alone. And I'll associate this first guy because, well, we have a mu. We should probably use that. All right, if I'm going to do mu, I might as well do the whole thing. And I'll throw on an associator here. Like I said, you might not get this the first go. So there's I'll put two ones here, although it's not really very interesting. Mostly because I want to put a mu and a 1. Mu has a 1 in its target, so this 1 is the same as this 1. And This guy here is just some unit stuff from the composition functor and the bicategory. This composite is isomorphic to A, and this guy is isomorphic to just one by itself. I don't need the sort of one tensor one. All right, so this is the easy side, and let's do the hard side and see what we can do at all. U is this guy over here. It's my bicategory triangle unit axiom that I wrote in a funny way. But you wouldn't do it like that. You would say, I've got mu, so let's use it. And you would try to do something. And the thing that might take you a while is to put this A here. But maybe not. No. Yeah. Hold on. Let me write the rest of this guy down. That's probably true. Okay. This side, I started with the idea, let's use mu and see what we can get. This side, well, I just have all this stuff on the boundary, and I'm just going to put everything in as best I can. So the first thing that you should notice is this guy right here looks like one half of a naturality square for the associator. Once you've done that, you should then notice that this over here looks like two halves of the two halves of an associating naturality square. That is, I can put an A here. And I get that guy. And this way. And I get an R dot. This is also. Associativity. I don't think I gave myself quite enough space. But we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be close. I mean, this is just supposed to be a concrete definition in dimension 3. That's all we want to write down. Okay. So now we've got this stuff here, And we've got an A1 and an A and an A here. So this looks very much like part of pi. So let's fill in the rest of pi. There's an A, F, G, H. And here's a 1A. Here's pi. Okay, so now we're left with this region here, which maybe I'll draw bigger. So. That's good. And we have an A. Then, let's see, we have a 1A going this way. Okay. So, what can we do with this thing? Well, there's an arrow going this way, which gets rid of the unit. And what does that look like? It looks a lot like the boundary of mu. So we get another mu. And so now the question is, what goes here? And the answer is, well, we don't have anything yet. So maybe we should go back to the world of bicategories and think what this is there and try to see if that gives us any clues. I'll use this board. I don't really care about these ones. So I'll start here like I should. H. Where I've taken off the F because those are all ones. Not very interested in that part. All right. So in a bicategory, this diagram commutes. You can use coherence to see that. Or you might have actually encountered this somewhere in doing a calculation. Maybe when proving the coherence theorem for bicategories, it's useful to know that this diagram commutes. So you might have even done it by hand at some point. McLane, then you would have thrown this in as an extra axiom in the very beginning. We are doing extra work now because we didn't want to do some extra work earlier. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, what's the sort of solution to our problem? Of course, it's throw in an extra piece of data. Which is called lambda. And once you've done it on the left side, you probably want to do it on the right side. Well, I'll go back to F's and G's. So let's see. Let's see if I can. No, I'll get it wrong. I'll get it wrong the way I want it. Once again, it doesn't really matter too much. Did I write it down? Oh, I did. It doesn't really matter that much what you write the boundary of these things as. You're going to roughly get the right thing. It just might not be optimal later. So the thing that's optimal later is to do it this way. And that guy's row. The mu? Yeah, you could do that. I wanted to do it the way you might do it at home if you didn't know this. Well, what you do is you try to write down what axioms you need. Right, we tried to write down a unit axiom, and in the middle we found this question mark, and we said, I don't really know what that is, but back in the bi-categories world, this diagram certainly commutes, and then maybe you do a little rummaging and you find out it's one of the original monoidal category axioms that we then discovered later to be unnecessary, and so then you don't feel so bad about putting in some extra data. Yeah, so this is basically what John was saying. This is the next level up if you take the proof that you don't need this lambda diagram as an axiom. It's roughly take this thing and extract this part from it to express it. I mean, right, that's a big mess, but you can do it.
So if you took S to be, if you took S to be the identity there, then the fact that you had one on the left would be, you know, that would kind of go away.
This goes
your formula for lambda
in terms of everything.